any doubt that that was a joyful noise. It is wonderful. Thank you. I'd like to give a big thanks to the Radabaugh's for all their work with the music to make our holy days very special. I know that's been something that they have taken on over the years to ensure that it is a special set. To be able to have that and then to take on with the kids doing that is fantastic. It's been a while since I've heard a message, and I've never actually given one of these messages, so bear with me, how's that? Looking at the Day of Trumpets. I think it's one of those things that I probably heard as a kid, and so I've continued to, well, I'll try to approach the Holy Day from a different angle or a different perspective, because I've heard things over 38, 39 years worth of being in the church. It seems like the same thing. But today I wanted to go back, maybe take a rehash for those of you who have heard this before, or if you haven't heard it, well then, here we go. The meaning of the Day of Trumpets, why it is that we have trumpets as a part of this day. We're going to look at some historical context there as trumpets were used, scripturally speaking, and then what we're looking forward to, what these trumpets and what that in and of itself looks forward to down the road. So let's start off, actually, by turning 29. Numbers chapter 29. As was referenced this morning, there is a shofar here in the front as part of the what is it called? The decor. There we go. Word thing. Shofar here. I actually played the trumpet for a number of years. It's been a while since I've pulled it out and dusted it off. But trumpets are a very unique instrument. They're very effective at some things. They are not the one you would very often choose as an instrument to soothe. If you're trying to put a child to sleep, the first instrument that comes to mind, likely not a trumpet or a bugle. If you're thinking, you know what, and I actually found it quite difficult because I've done some special music on different holy days, and finding ones that would kind of like fit the bill of what you would say is, well, that's a lovely piece that you would play at services. Difficult for a trumpet. Jazz, you can find them. If you're going to find some marches, you can find them. But things that you would play, like the soothing sort of melodies, generally speaking, not a trumpet. And here in Numbers chapter 29, verse 1, it says, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, which is today, you shall have a holy convocation, and so we have come together. You shall do no customary work, for it is a day of blowing the trumpets. I play the trumpet. I cannot imagine an entire day centered around blowing the trumpet. I have two kids. It's amazing the amount and the frequency of high volume cacophony that can be created with just two small children. When I think of trumpets and I think of blowing of them, it also makes me think of Gideon. He had 300 men. Each of them had a trumpet. Each of them had the lantern right under the vase, right? That's a lot of trumpets. If you have a brass band, you might have two or three. But having all of that, this is a day, a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. We are off to offer a burnt offering as a sweet aroma to the Lord, one young bull, one ram, and seven lambs. And so it goes through what we do as far as the offerings there on the Feast of Trumpets. Let's go back. We were there earlier today, Leviticus chapter 23. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 24, we see here also, speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, ye shall have a Sabbath rest. A memorial blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. Incidentally, I was a Boy Scout, and I got my bugler merit badge, and you have to learn the different calls. Just like for the children of Israel, there were various calls that they would play on the shofar or on the silver trumpets. There are different calls, and so I would have to learn revelry. That'll wake you up. That will wake you up. It is loud. It is piercing. It is very distinct. And so it is a memorial of the blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it. The Hebrew word here for blowing of trumpets is teruah. Teruah. It signifies making a loud noise or a clamor. It's sometimes translated as shout. Again, I referenced having kids. I would put teruah into that category. There is a shout. There is a loud noise. Let's go to Joshua chapter 6. We're looking here at some of the times that we're seeing the use of trumpets. We have had two references now to it being used, obviously on the same day there, the day of trumpets, the feast of trumpets, a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. Joshua chapter 6, verse 10. Now we see here, another incident, Joshua chapter 6 and verse 10. Now Joshua had commanded the people, saying, "You shall not shout." Again, going by way of background here, they are around, surrounding the city of Jericho. As we heard a little bit about Rahab in the message earlier this morning. But here they're surrounding Jericho. And he commanded the people, saying, "You shall not shout or make any noise with your voice." This is just an intriguing study of in by itself, where you consider them marching around the city. I'm pretty sure that the city was not ridiculing them at all or making any noises, but they were supposed to march around it silently. Until, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout, teruah. Then you shall shout. And so they rendered here an alarm. So you can have teruah being the blowing of trumpets. Could be translated shout. Also translated as rendering an alarm. And that would happen in association with the ram's horn or the shofar. Now this is not a ram's horn. If you were to look down and see what's here as part of the decoration, the decor. This is not a ram's horn. But that would have been a little bit shorter. It'll be slightly more shrill because it doesn't have all the time to kind of develop the note to it. But the ram's horn, they'd be shorter. About 12 to 15 inches in length in comparison to what we have here. But here we have Joshua and the people surrounding the city of Jericho. Let's go a little bit farther forward to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 4. Verse 19. Jeremiah chapter 4, verse 19. It says, "Oh, my soul, I am pained in my very heart. My heart makes a noise in me. I cannot hold my peace because you have heard, oh, my soul, the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of war." And so the trumpet's utility here was to sound as an alarm of war. A form of teruah, if associated with the silver trumpets, you know, it could mean other things. Hatsotara was dealing with the silver trumpets, and we can actually go back to Numbers 10, if you will. We'll see another situation with this, with a slightly different meaning. Numbers chapter 10, verse 9. So the trumpets were used as an alarm, as a call to war. Numbers chapter 10. Verse 9. We read, "When you go to war in your land against the enemy who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with a trumpet, and you will be remembered before the Lord." So here it's not only sounding as an alarm for the people of Israel, but it's calling to remembrance them in God's mind. He's saying, if you're going to do this, you're going to be obedient, and you sound the trumpet, we call to remember before the Lord, and you will be saved from your enemies. You'll be saved from your enemies. So we have the use of the trumpet. We have the use of the shofar. We see it being used on the Feast of Trumpets as a memorial, the blowing of trumpets. We also see here that it's used to call to remembrance the people in the mind of God. It's also used as a call to war. It's also used to shout joyfully, to raise an alarm. Let's go to Psalm. So we're to use the trumpet, the shofar, These are here, teruah, meaning to shout, to render, to raise an alarm, to shout joyfully. There's also the use of trumpets. If we go back to Numbers 10, we see here that there were two trumpets, silver trumpets, that were to be created and used by specific individuals. Numbers chapter 10, verse 1. The Lord speaks to Moses and he says, "Make two silver trumpets for yourself. You shall make them of hammered work. You shall use them for calling the congregation and for directing the movement of the camps. When they blow both of them, all door of the tabernacle of meeting. But if they blow only one, then the leaders, the heads of the divisions of Israel, shall gather." So you have a symbol, a signal, so they could tell the difference between whether one is being called or two is being called, but it was used to gather the people, either the entire congregation or just the leaders. When you sound the advance, the king or journey, and this is, again, I reference the kind of the way that the military has used the bugle and the various callings. This is not a new thing, but they use it, the different signals, to speak without verbal communication, walkie-talkies, or the things that we have today to be able to have instant communication. You could play a sound and you knew exactly what it meant. When you hear this call, this is what you do. When you hear this call, this is what you do, or this is who should do it. And so they had this set up. "And when the assembly is to be gathered together, you shall blow, but not sound the advance. The sons of Aaron, the priests, shall blow the trumpets, and these shall be to you as an ordinance forever throughout your generations." And so we see here who is supposed to blow the trumpets. It was only the priests. It was not just anybody. These two silver trumpets that were created, they were to be blown and used by the priests. Not any Levite, but just the priests, who were Levites, but not all Levites are priests, but all priests are Levites. Verse 9, "When you go to war in your land against the enemy who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, and you will be remembered before the Lord your God, and you will be saved from your enemies." We read that. "Also in the day of your gladness, in your appointed feasts, and at the beginning of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings. And there shall be a memorial for you before your God. I am the Lord your God." And so trumpets were not a unique sound for the children of Israel to hear. They got up to move, you had the trumpet. You're calling to assembly, you had a trumpet. The beginning of your month, you had a trumpet. Your assemblies, you had a trumpet. But today, it is a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. It wasn't just your normal, everyday thing. And so then, again, they had the trumpets used, again, as a symbol, as a signal, and as a means of communication. So not only were the trumpets used to initiate movement, they were used there. Again, we saw teruah being a shout or an alarm or a call to war. But they're used to communicate and to symbol, to signal to the people, but also not just to the people. It was for the people to remember that if you use this signal that I've given you, God said, then I'm going to remember. You go into battle, you sound the trumpet, your priests are sounding the trumpet, then I'm going to remember you and you're going to have victory over your enemies. And so there are a lot of ways that the trumpet was used. And if you think about that, you try to lay that over what we have for the day of trumpets today. And as we look forward to, yeah, we're not moving as a body of people, millions in the wilderness. Do you have to be able to speak to somebody a mile away and listen for the trumpet, right? But it still signifies for us a call to war. We heard about a little bit about that in the second message this morning. Because things are coming. There are going to be bad times, and there are going to be trumpets. You can go. We'll actually go into Revelation a little bit. Mr. Kiesel didn't take all of those scriptures, but there's going to be a call to action. And this really is, in that way, it's the start. It's the start of movement. As we have crept from Passover through the days of unleavened bread, through Pentecost, and now we're here at the start. You could say, I mean, you just get a quick succession between trumpets and atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, the eighth day. It's such a fast snowballs, down the mountain sort of pace. And we have at the beginning of that a memorial of the blowing of trumpets, to shout, to call us to action, to tell us to move. His priests blow the trumpets, and we better pack up. We better be moving. We better be ready to go. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24. This was referenced this morning, but we're going to turn there today. The Feast of Trumpets, for us, while it is not a physical movement as a nation, it should be a call to action for us. It should be something that resonates in our ears. It initiates the start of the autumn festivals. And also, again, looking forward to what we're going to read here in Matthew 24, it portends the prophetic events that we know are coming. And as we look at the world around us, you're like, I don't know how much longer it can be. And if we're thinking like that, then we ought to, in that way, have some trumpets ringing in our ears. Matthew chapter 24, verse 30. This is speaking of the coming of the Son of Man after the tribulation. In those days, the sun is going to be darkened. I'm in verse 29. And the moon will not give its light, and stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And this is where I think of Mr. Repardian when he referenced the movie Independence Day. There is a scene there where there's a huge ship, and the clouds roll back. I don't think that was an accident when the cinematographers put that together, because it says every eye is going to see Christ when He returns. When He comes back down and He stands on the Mount of Olives, the clouds are going to roll back. They're going to see Him on the clouds on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And He will send His angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and it will gather together His elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. He's going to gather them all together. The trumpet calls, and His people move. This is what it was used for in the time of Israel in the wilderness. It is what it used to call them to observe the days, the start of their months. But the same thing is going to happen yet again in the future. If you think about, we do get tornadoes around here. You ever hear that siren go off? How many of you still hear it? I think over in Deer Creek, it's the first Tuesday of the month that goes off in Deer Creek. I don't know where it is, how it is in your... Is it always the first Tuesday everywhere? Yeah. Do you all hear it? Do some of you kind of tune it out now that you know it's the first Tuesday? I know I have. But that's kind of like, that's what happens when you have something that goes on all the time. That's about as, you know, soothing as the sound of a trumpet all the time. But today is a blast of a day. In that manner, with the trumpet, with the sounding of the trumpet, to get our attention, to tell us that it's time to move. It's not time to be sedentary. I mean, when you count how much the children of Israel moved, they had to be sick of it. I mean, the efficiencies they would have had to figure out so that it wouldn't be annoying to set up camp and tear down camp. I'm sure there was a lot of inventiveness going on at that time, because if you had to pick a move, sometimes they were only somewhere for a couple days. Sometimes it was a couple months. Sometimes they were there for a while. But to have to pick up and move whenever you... Now? I just got set up. I just got the camp set. But it doesn't matter. God said, you hear the trumpet, you move. And here's how you're going to move. In these courses, these certain people at this time, and the trumpet that is going to sound is going to call His elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. The trumpet is also used to mark something else that is yet to come. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And we'll pick it up in verse 16. Somebody took 1 Thessalonians out of my Bible. There we go. People move. And the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall always be with the Lord. So the trumpet calls, announces not only the return of Christ, the King is here, He comes down with a shout, with the trumpet, the voice of an archangel, the time that His people, His saints, are resurrected. See this a little bit more in 1 Corinthians chapter 15. 1 Corinthians 15. pick it up in verse 12, 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 12, just tying this together. There is the trumpet being used to announce the 15, verse 12. We read here, "Now if Christ is preached that he has been raised from the dead, how do some among you say there is no resurrection of the dead? But if there's no resurrection of the dead, then Christ is not risen. And if Christ is not risen, then our preaching is empty and your faith is also empty." So this line of logic, risen, and he's at his Father's right hand. We know that he's risen, he's at his Father's right hand. So if he's risen, we know this is where you're trusting, you're building a relationship, and God learns to trust us through our faith and through the actions that we take, just as we learn to trust chairs that we sit in. Right? God is trusting, and we're building that relationship with him, and so we have the belief that Christ, and we're going to have that opportunity to be made alive in him. And so Paul is building this argument. Let's go a little bit farther down to verse 20. "But now Christ is risen from the dead and has become the firstfruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since by man came death, by man came the resurrection of the dead. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ all shall be made alive, but each one in his own order. Christ the firstfruits, and afterwards those who are Christ at his coming." See, so again, when does this happen? This is hearkening back to what we read in 1 Thessalonians, right? Those from the four corners, and then those who are alive and remain will be there to be caught up. Verse 42, going down a little bit farther. "So also is the resurrection of the dead. The body is sown in corruption, but it is raised in incorruption." So we know that there's a change coming. "It is sown in dishonor, but it is raised in glory. It is sown in weakness. It is raised in power. It is sown a natural body, but it is raised a spiritual body." There is a natural body, there is a spiritual body. And so we know that on the Day of Trumpets, the change that is occurring, it's not just changing of position of people in the camp. It's not just calling them, but it also is calling them to a different life. Not a physical life, but a change in the state. Let's go down to 51 in 1 Corinthians 15. It says, "Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." You see, this is not the first trumpet that is heard. We'll get into Revelation. But today is a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. Not just one action. It's a culmination. And there are many of those, as Mr. Kiesel alluded to in his message. There are many trumpets that we'll kind of touch on in the book of Revelation. But they're all there. And the culmination of them, what they lead up to there, verse 52, "In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed." It's quite an awesome event. It's not a secret thing. It's not just going to happen for some. It's not just going to be, oh, I looked away and I missed it. He's coming back and every eye is going to see him. The heavens are going to melt with fervent heat. He comes down. Sorry, not the heaven. But the Mount of Olives, he comes down onto the Mount of Olives. It cleaves in two. People see him. People know. But he's coming down at that trumpet. And his armies are with him. Those who are dead first, and then those who are alive and remain will be changed. And that trumpet, again, calls all of his people. Brings them together. He's going to return in power. And Christ will be there on this earth, here on this earth, as a God of justice and of judgment. Let's turn now to Revelation chapter 5. Revelation chapter 5. Verse 5. Revelation chapter 5, verse 5. We'll spend the majority of the rest of this message in Revelation. But in Revelation chapter 5, verse 5, it says, "One of the elders said to me, do not weep. Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah." You see, Jesus Christ, people wanted him to be the lion the first time he came. But he came as a sacrificial lamb. "Behold, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has prevailed to open the scroll and to loose its seven seals." The end time events that are pictured as Christ is unrolling the scroll. And he's breaking the seals one by one. But he's the one. And so we get the inset here in verses of what's happening. So he starts to unfold this scroll. He hasn't even got to what's inside. But as you break the seals of the scroll, these events are occurring. And again, when does he come back? He comes down from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and the trumpet of God. This is what he comes down with. He's the one who takes the scroll, he opens it. Verse 7. He came and he took the scroll out of the right hand of him who sat on the throne. When he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And he sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain, and have redeemed us to God by your blood." There's a whole other message here. I started writing another sermon during Mr. Kiesel's message. Sorry, Mr. Kiesel. But there's a whole other one here talking about the payment that has been made and the wedding feast and the whole process that goes on with the feast when you understand how historically a wedding occurred and the betrothal. But he came and he's worthy. He's paid the price. He's redeemed us to God by his blood out of every tribe and tongue and people and nation, and have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth. We become a different kind of people. We read earlier in 1 Corinthians, we're going to be not just physical, but we have a change, a transformation. In the twinkling of an eye, we change and we become spiritual, putting on incorruptible. As you go down through, and we see what occurs as Christ has returned, as Christ is opening the various seals. And it's important to know, these are future events. There are some things that you might be able to look and see. What we see in this day and in this life and at this time is but it's a modicum of a taste of what we know is coming, because it's going to be worse than we have ever experienced before. If you look in Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21, the seals and the sequence of them there, they match right over with what we will read here in Revelation. We might flip back and forth a little bit, but we'll see here that the same thing is happening. It has already been, it's been recorded, and again, God will go through Scripture, and He'll make sure that it's recorded multiple times. If it's recorded three times, it is a sure thing that is going to happen. It's not a question. Revelation chapter 6, verse 1, we have the first seal here, the conqueror. It says, "Now I saw, when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard one of the four living creatures saying with a voice like thunder, 'Come and see.' And I looked, and behold, a white horse who sat on it had a bow, and a crown was given to him, and he went out conquering and to conquer. And he opened the second seal. I heard the second living creature saying, 'Come and see.' Another horse, fiery red, went out, and it was granted to the one who sat on it to take peace from the earth, and that a people should kill one another, and there was given to him a great sword." The third seal. Verse 5, "So I looked, and behold, a black horse, and he who sat on it had a pair of scales in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four living creatures say, 'A quart of wheat for a denarii, and three quarts of barley for a denarius, and do not harm the oil and the wine.'" We see what goes on through here. These seals and the difficulty that they then pour out in that way. Probably shouldn't say pour, because you get to the bowls and it gets confusing. So, but what is unleashed on the earth with these seals, and what we see going on is we have widespread fears, we have widespread selfishness and pride and greed, and we have destruction going on within the natural realm of things, where it's just not what it normally is, and you have triple digits down. Any of the walls that were there, any of the hurdles that would have stopped them from coming out, anything that held itself up as a vestige of a god in Egypt, he just decimated it. And it's, again, similar. All the things that we can rely on, all the things, little gods in our life, that we can trust in and have faith in, instead of him, he just starts taking those away. He says, "Okay, are you gonna trust in me yet? You heard the trumpet. You see these things going on. Are you going to move yet? Or do you really like where you are? Do you want to get up and go?" So you can go down through the seals. Let's go to 24. As a reminder here in the Olivet Prophecy, Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, Jesus told his disciples, he said, "This coming time." They wanted to know what it was like. What is it going to be, the sign of the times, your return to the end of the age? They wanted to know. And so he told them, And in verse 21, he says, be a great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. I've lived a pretty cushy life. There are not many veterans who have seen, but I would encourage anybody to find one who has, and if they're willing, there's a conversation about the ugliness of man and what happens in war that you and I will never fathom. If we have not been there, you will never fathom how mean people can be to one another, what they will justify in the heat of it. And when it says here that it's worse than ever has been, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad across the board, because we've had a life and we have a world where you can see pockets of it at times. But it's going to be a time that is worse than anything. Sorry, I'm remembering things that my grandfather shared about the Second World War, and people are mean. People are bad. They do bad things. Let's go back to Revelation chapter 6. Revelation 6. The things that we do to hurt one another. What it's going to take to get the attention of people to realize that they need to change their ways. And this is why it has to happen. This is why it takes 3.5 years of just being decimated and beat down for them to even be willing to consider some kind of a repentant mindset. And even then, it's not going to be the case. But Revelation chapter 6, verse 12, moving down. Actually, let's read verse 9. So he opened the fifth seal. I saw under the altar the souls of those who had been slain in the world for the word of God and for the testimony which they held. And they cried out with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell in the earth? And a white robe was given to each of them, and it was said to them that they should rest a little while longer until both the number of their fellow servants and their brethren who would be killed as they were was completed. As we go through life, I think it's important for us to do the mental exercises, and I think that God gives us that opportunity, especially on His holy days. The mental exercise of what is your line in the sand for God. It's easy to wipe it out and move it back when things get uncomfortable. You're like, oh, you know what, that's not the hill I'm going to die on. I'm going to move it back over here. And I'm not saying what your hill should be. But if you don't figure out what it is, you will find yourself compromising all along the way until you don't even realize that you're not standing for God anymore. And this day, the day of trumpets, the day of blowing of trumpets, when His people are gathered, I think it behooves us to remember that we need to do that. We need to be for God. We need to be there. I've given messages about His standard and being under His standard. Because we need to know where we stand with our Father. And these martyrs who cry out, the world, again, and people are not nice. Our nature is not a loving one, and that's why it needs to change. It needs to change to follow God, and He calls us to do that, to walk with Him, to move with Him, to be transformed by His Son. Verse 12, I looked when He opened the sixth seal, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became like blood, and the stars fell. The stars of heaven fell to the earth as a fig tree drops its late figs when it is shaken by a mighty wind. And then the sky receded as a scroll, as a scroll when it is rolled up, and every mountain and island was moved out of its place. And the kings of the earth, the great men, the rich men, the commanders, all the people who thought that they knew what they needed to do to be in charge, all the people who relied on themselves and their power and their influence and their money and whatever it was that they had, every one of them, rich, the commanders, the mighty men, every slave and every free man hid themselves in the caves and in the rocks of the mountains. And it's then that you feel like a small person. And maybe then you begin to ask, should I be doing this? Should I be living this way of life, or should I change? And they said to the mountains and the rocks, fall on us and hide us from the face of Him who sits on the throne and from the wrath of the Lamb. This is all the beginning. This is all the beginning. These are the seals. The seventh seal is what is known as the Day of the Lord. So things that we have read, you can see some of them, but we know in our time today, but there are things that it's only going to get worse. You get into the Day of the Lord, the seventh seal, that is known then as that 3.5 years, that time of trouble, that great tribulation. Verse 17, it says, "For the great day of His wrath has come, and who is able to stand?" Let's go to Joel chapter 2. We'll see here just these things are foretold in so many places. But Joel chapter 2, don't often turn to the minor prophets. Joel chapter 2, verse 31. It says, "The sun shall be turned into darkness." Remember, it said sackcloth of hair. "And the moon into blood before the coming of the great and awesome day of the Lord. And shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there shall be deliverance, as the Lord has said, among the remnant whom the Lord calls." See, God still, His whole desire with all of this is not just to sit there and snuff out His enemies. The whole desire is for people to be shaken to, as the trumpet does, blast your ears out, wake you up, make you realize, make us realize that we ought to be doing something different, that we ought to be changing. And hopefully this wake-up call will do that. And again, all those that remnant that He is going to call and He's going to work with. If I turn back, let's a little bit earlier in Joel chapter 2, verse 11, Joel 2, verse 11, says, "The Lord gives voice before His army, for His camp is very great. For strong is the one who executes His word. For the day of the Lord is great and very terrible. Who can endure it?" See, He gives voice before His armies. He gives voice before His armies. He is the one who goes and fights before them. He is the one who, again, if they're willing to blow that trumpet, then He's going to remember them. He's going to deliver them. He's going to save them from their enemies. And we have that same opportunity. Again, we're here as a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. And the trumpet does so many things. It does so many things. Let's go to Revelation chapter 3. God's deliverance, again, going before His people as His voice goes before them. The trumpet in that way offers deliverance for His people. Because they're showing themselves obedient, they're showing themselves willing to follow Him. Revelation chapter 3, verse 10. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 10. He says, "Because you have kept My command to persevere, I also will keep you from the hour of trial which shall come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth." He says, "I'm going to preserve you. If you're following Me, if you're moving when the camp moves, if you're here and you're with Me, I will keep you. I will preserve you from the hour of trial which will come upon the whole world to test those who dwell on the earth." Revelation chapter 11, verse 15 says, "Then the seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, 'The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of His Christ. He shall reign forever and ever.' And the 24 elders who sat before God on their thrones fell on their faces and worshiped God, saying, 'We give You thanks, the One who is and who was and who is to come, because You have taken Your great power and reigned. The nations were angry, and Your wrath has come, and the time of the dead that they should be, and the time of the dead that they should be judged, and that You should reward Your servants, the prophets and the saints, and those who fear Your name, small and great, and should destroy those who destroy the earth.'" But it's the end. Today is a memorial of the blowing of trumpets. And the last trumpet that comes is the one where He comes as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and it's His. He's taken it on. He is the one who is in charge. And for all those times that you look out and say, "Ah, that doesn't seem..." I was one of those kids who happened to see what I deemed unfair. How come they get to have this when I don't get to have that? And I'm working hard about this. And all these other things that you can do humanly to compare ourselves amongst ourselves, which God tells us not to do. He says, "I'm going to take care of it. I've been watching. The Lord is not slack concerning His promises, but He's patient." This is exactly what He says He's going to do at the sounding of the seventh trumpet. The nations were angry. because his wrath has come, and the time of the dead that they should be judged, all those things are going to be taken care of. Even after that, there's more that comes. But this memorial of trumpets, it really does picture not only what has happened in the past with the children of Israel and what is going to happen in the future, but for us today, it should picture what God wants us to do, which is to move, to march, to go where He wants us to go, because the end goal, just as it was for the children of Israel when they're wandering for 40 years, was to get to the promised land. And the end goal for us is to be a part of His family who is going to help mold and to teach. We heard about kings and priests, to be transformed from being a physical, fallible, weak human being to one in His family who is like Him, who is able then again to teach and to be moving about, to become a part of His family. Trumpets do a lot of things. And this is only scratching the surface. There's so many messages you can have on this day on what it means. But trumpets are there to shout, to call to action, to call to arms, to, again, move His people. And God sends those trumpets. The question is, are we hearing them? Are we hearing His call to action? Or are we tuned it out? Let's make sure as we go about the rest of this day that we not only hear those trumpets, but we know what they're calling us to. They're calling us to marriage supper. They're calling us to a change. They're calling us to His family. All those who have an ear, let them hear.